Thank you. We're joined as usual by Rhode Island Public Radio political analyst Scott McKay. Hello, Scott.
Good morning, Rhode Island.
And University of Rhode Island political science professor Maureen Moakley. Good morning, Maureen.
Good morning, everyone.
We're pleased to welcome back as our guest State Representative Patricia Morgan, a Republican from West Warwick. Thank you for joining us.
Glad to be here.
The House of Representatives on Wednesday passed an almost $9 billion budget for the fiscal year starting July 1st. Republicans say the spending plan does not do enough to help regular Rhode Islanders, but Democratic Speaker Nicholas Mattiello points to tax cuts for businesses, lower beach fees, and tax relief for some retirees. Representative Morgan, you haven't made any secret of your dislike for the budget. How would you sum up your objections to it?
I just don't think it goes far enough. Average Rhode Islanders really need a break. We're not a lightly taxed state. We are the sixth highest tax burden in the country, and it shows in people's lives. Republicans thought they could have done better.
Maureen, this is an election year. How does that impact the budget? Is this about the most aggressive budget you would expect in an election year?
Well, I think given it's an election year, I first want to compliment Representative Morgan because I really think it's important that we have a loyal opposition, and some of the members of the Republican Party are raising objections. That said, I may not agree with the objections. I think this was a relatively good budget, moving in the right direction. For example, in terms of relief for retirees, I'm not sure we should worry about retirees right now that make over $100,000 in income. I mean, I think it's good to have people questioning what's going on, but I do think in fairness to the Democrats or the leadership that this is a relatively good budget.
Scott, there seems to be a little bit of a mind meld between Speaker Mattiello and Governor Raimondo in terms of making some incremental changes on the business climate. Your take on the budget?
That's what happens in politics. You have incremental change. Politics is the art of the possible, not, as we see in Washington, the art of doing nothing. I think basically it's a budget that Rhode Island usually has. We muddle through in Rhode Island. We get from one year to the next. There aren't any major long-term things here. Some of the things like the lower beach fees look to me like kind of window dressing and tokenism. And I was kind of disappointed, and I know that George Nee from the AFL-CIO really was, that they didn't raise the minimum wage. The Rhode Island minimum wage is going to be $1.40 an hour under Massachusetts come January, which I don't think is really a good thing. People talk about taxes and business costs being equal. Nobody wants to admit that our workers should share in some of that.
Well, speaking of the General Assembly, State Rep. John Carnevale faces questions about whether he actually lives in his Providence district. That's after an undercover WPRI-TV report this week. Carnevale tells some reporters that he does live in his district and that he plans to seek re-election this year. Representative Morgan, what do you make of this?
Well, I think the spotlight is now on the Providence Board of Elections, whether they're going to do the right thing or play politics, quite frankly. It's pretty clear from the reports that he doesn't sleep there, eat there, do much there except pick up the rent and checks, and that means he doesn't live in his district. I guess he is going to try to fight that, but the truth of the matter is there are rules, there are laws, and what he has been doing is a violation of those laws.
Scott, there have been some whispers for some time questioning whether Representative Carnevale actually lives in his district. What kind of upshot do you expect from this?
Well, I can't think of anything that looks sillier than this state representative with a T-shirt over his face as a television camera's on him. Talk about transparency. I think, like Ricky used to say to Lucy, he's got some splaining to do. That old district, I'd rather see the voters boot him out, but there's no Republican Party in that area, and it would have to be a Democratic primary challenge. It's increasingly a Spanish-speaking part of Providence, the old Silver Lake, and I think sometimes guys like him, the families, you know, his brother was the sainted Buddy Carnevale, who was well-known, head of HEW in the House, a well-known guy. So I would like to see a strong primary challenger to him.
I think it's already been explained. The man had a shirt around his head so nobody would recognize him. Clearly, you don't do that if you're being open and transparent about where your living address is.
Maureen, after a seven-year impasse, the General Assembly is moving forward with a move to allow the voters to strengthen the Ethics Commission. To what extent does this Carnevale episode detract from that?
I don't think it detracts from it. I think it adds to it. I think it makes, look, he's an old-style Paul, and happily, these people are leaving the scene. My hope is this hope that Scott has, that he will be challenged in a primary, because although it's pretty obvious that he probably doesn't live there, it's very hard to prove. The best thing is democracy. It's the best thing is to someone in the neighborhood to challenge him. But I think this only adds to the conviction that we do need ethics reform. I expect it's moving in the right direction. So in any case, I think it makes the case that we need change, but I'm optimistic that change is coming.
We tried to put some, the Republicans tried to put some transparency and accountability into the community service grant program, if you want to call it, and they were turned down soundly by the Democrats. We need not just a law, we need to have a commitment to transparency and accountability and good moral conduct.
We're short on time here, and I want to talk about the mass shooting in Orlando, Florida at a gay nightclub earlier this week. If someone is intent on committing this kind of mayhem, Scott, is there really any way to stop them?
Look, in a free society, it's hard to stop these things. However, that said, we should make it harder for people to get these ridiculous guns that are military guns. You know, Chief O'Donnell of the state police, just about all the police people you talk to will tell you, no one needs an assault rifle to shoot a deer or a duck.
Maureen, is the motivation of an individual more important than the availability of weaponry in preventing this kind of thing?
I think it's a complex issue, but certainly we can mitigate the problem. I mean, how many incidents have we stopped by virtue of having people on watch lists? We have to expand that. And the whole idea of assault weapons, I think we finally reached a tipping point. The pathetic Congress is finally now going to do something about it. It's long overdue. We can't stop this, but it's a complicated issue. We have to deal with parts of it that we can manage.
Representative Morgan, Republicans are typically strong supporters of gun rights. From your perspective, what should be done to try and make these kind of mass shootings less frequent?
I just think what happened down there is horrible. And it's clear that the man, I think it's clear that he had some mental illness. And somehow we have to figure out how to identify those folks early. He was already interviewed by the FBI, is my understanding. It's the free society against mental illness, but somehow we have to work through those issues so that when somebody is dangerously mentally ill, homicidally dangerously ill, that we can prevent this. I don't know what the answer is. Well,
make it harder to get a gun.
You know, but then what would you do? Get a bomb? Or knives, or any other thing. So it's that mental illness part of it, and it's really tricky in an open society.
We're out of time, so we have to leave it there. Thanks for joining us on Political Roundtable. Scott.
Thank you.
Maureen.
Thank you.
And from West Warwick, State Representative Patricia Morgan.
Thank you.
We're funded by you, our listeners, and by the Robertson Foundation, continuing the commitment of its founder, Stephen Hamblett, to honest government in Rhode Island through in-depth political coverage. And if you enjoyed the conversation, please visit our On Politics blog at rapr.org.
Major funding for Political Roundtable is provided by the Rhode Island Foundation, using philanthropy to move Rhode Island forward. Details at rhodeislandfoundation.org.